at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
For decades, we worried the burning Amazon could tip world climate. Closer to home, the great boreal forest across the planet's far north, it is burning hard. Where is all that carbon going? Will it make global warming worse? Our guest is co-author of the March 2023 paper, Record High CO2 Emissions from Boreal Forests in 2021. Dr. Philippe Sieyès is Associate Director of the Laboratoire de Sciences du Climat et de l'Environnement, and that climate lab is located at the Institut Pierre-Simon-Laplace, a top-level research institute west of Versailles. Dr. Sieyès is a physicist, and he specializes in the global carbon cycle and climate change. From France, Philippe Sieyès, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good morning, welcome.
How far from the average emissions this century was the 2021 boreal wildfire season? What made it special and worth the study?
Well, 21 was a particularly dry and hot year during the summer. And what makes it special is that it was drought at the same time in northern Canada and also in northern Russia, where most of the boreal forest lies. And the fact that we have a synchronized drought over those two large areas covered by forest caused exceptionally large fire emissions of CO2 in the atmosphere.
It's strange that the 2021 boreal fires, they were so far out of the ordinary, a bigger change, you say, than any change in tropical fires this century, and yet we heard practically nothing about it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that there is much more awareness in the media when fires happen in North America compared to when they happen in Siberia. Siberia is remote. We don't have good relations with Russia. So everything which happens in this very remote part of the world is often overlooked. And in that year, in fact, fires in Siberia were particularly extreme, and they contributed a lot to the emission anomaly.
And you say 80% of the carbon released by fires is taken up by vegetation in subsequent growing seasons, and only 20% remains in the atmosphere longer, adding to the warming burden. But I'm wondering, is that still true for a couple of reasons? When never before seen huge fires may produce CO2 more than previous fires, and other climate factors like drought may change the landscape so the former rate of uptake just does not happen, it may not regrow. Could these numbers change in a warming world?
You are completely right. We are living in a changing world. So what we could say about the time it takes, or it will take, for the forest to recover its carbon is based on the climate of the past. And we don't know, of course, how dry will be the climate in the future and how it will slow down the recovery of forest or even change the forest types that we'll have in the boreal regions. We see in North America, for instance, that a lot of spruce forests are progressively replaced by birch or aspen forests because of different climate conditions ongoing.
How does the amount of added atmospheric carbon from wildfires compare to the emissions from fossil fuels? Is the wildfire addition enough to matter?
Yes. During that particular year, it mattered a lot because the amount of CO2 that was expelled to the atmosphere during the fire was as high as the amount of fossil CO2 which is emitted by a large economy. So that was very significant during that particular extreme year. And we see that again in 2023 when we have also exceptionally high fires in Canada.
Northern wildfires in recent years have been frightening. When we see the images of them, it's amazing. They seem more extreme. Are they?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that we see a surge of mega fires, extreme events, in particular in the boreal regions, that seem to be above what we have seen in the recent decades.
We know the Arctic is warming around four times faster than the rest of the planet. Does it matter that boreal fire emissions are occurring in the far north? Does location of emissions matter?
Well, CO2 that is emitted by any part of the globe is very quickly dispersed in the atmosphere, where it causes additional warming. So the location where the emissions take place for the carbon dioxide emission do not matter too much. However, fires also warm the climate because behind them, they leave a black surface. And when the soil surface is black, it catches up the sun radiation and it further warms the surface. So in respect to the change of soil color, having black soils in the Arctic in summer after fires is a cause of additional warming. And for this, yes, it matters, the fact that it is in the north compared to the tropics.
I guess the darker soil, if it gets hotter, might actually start to melt some of the permafrost below it.
This is actually true, because in some regions there is permafrost, means permanently frozen ground, and obviously you have a lot of heat and energy which is produced at the soil surface when you have an extreme fire. So this helps melt the soil ice and further decompose the carbon which is in the soil. And sometimes this permafrost layer will not recover. Indeed, in boreal forest, most of the carbon is not contained in the trees or in the roots or in the leaves. It is contained in the soil. And part of the soil is also burned when you have an extreme fire.
Especially if there's peat involved. So fires have two contradictory effects in the atmosphere. At first, the smoke, which can cross a whole continent, as we saw this year, it cools the lands below the, just as though they were clouds, really. Those aerosols rain out within weeks, though, and that leaves the carbon dioxide lasting thousands of years. With wildfire impacts, how does the cooling versus the warming compare?
That's a very good question. I think most of the effect of wildfires is actually directed to more warming, because the aerosol particles which are produced by wildfires are called black carbon or soot. And this type of particles has the effect to warm the climate. The only effect through which fire may cool the climate partly is the fact that when you replace a dark forest in winter by a bare soil which has burned, which is now covered by snow, the snow, of course, is whiter, it's brighter than the dark forest, and this acts to cool the climate after fire happens. This is the only effect through which fire can actually have a climate cooling effect, which opposes the warming effect of the particles and the greenhouse gases that they emit to the atmosphere.
How does carbon from wildfires in northern boreal forests compare with carbon emissions from famous tropical forests like the Amazon?
Well, it depends on the year, because in the year 2019, for instance, there was no special activity, no huge boreal fire, and it was an extreme year for burning in the tropical forest. And more recently, boreal fires have been larger than tropical fires. There is more carbon in the trees of tropical forests because they are bigger. So when they burn, the burning of the trees produces more carbon. But on the other hand, as I said before, there is much more carbon in the soil of boreal forest than in the soil of tropical forest. And therefore, if the fire is burning part of the soil in the boreal region, it contributes to emit more CO2 than if it burns in tropical region.
But you think boreal fires may become a more important driver of climate change than burning in the Amazon, the Congo, or Indonesia?
I believe so, because, you know, the Amazon and the Congo and Indonesia should not burn. Most of the fires are because humans set fires during the dry season. But those are wet forests, and wet tropical forests should not burn, except for human, you know, degradation and activity. On the other hand, it seems inevitable that when the climate is extremely dry during several consecutive days or weeks, and when it's extremely hot in the Arctic and the boreal zone, it seems inevitable that more and more extreme boreal fires will continue to happen, because their occurrence is really related to the dryness and the temperature of the climate during the summer. And we know that the climate has been warming a lot in this region.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery in a way, because the predictions for the climate were that there would be more precipitation in the boreal forest, that the northern areas would become wetter, and yet we're seeing more forest fires. I talked to Dr. Michael Flanagan about this from the University of Alberta, and he said, well, look, it only takes 3 days of really hot weather to dry those thin northern soils out, and then you're ready for fires, and we're getting more lightning than we used to get. So I guess it makes sense, even though there might be more precipitation, we still could have more fires.
Yes, it is possible indeed. And in fact, you know, most of the more precipitation pattern, which is predicted by most of the climate models, is more for the Arctic. And many regions in the boreal zone, where boreal forests are pretty dry. You know, central Canada is a pretty dry area in summer. Eastern Siberia and Siberia is also pretty dry in summer. It rains less than what the plant would like to, you know, use as water from the soil to grow and persist. So, in fact, many areas in the boreal forest regions are relatively dry, and it is sufficient to have a few weeks of extremely dry conditions. You have a lot of fuel. The fuel is very dry, and we all know that when a fire happens, then you know, it produces a lot of combustion, and a lot of energy is released, and then more trees are burned nearby, and the fire propagates at a very high rate.
A fast look at the changes or anomalies in 2021 that I saw in your paper suggests that particular fire season was more heavily concentrated in Siberia than in northern Canada. And the year of 2023 seems the opposite, but maybe I got that wrong. Is that correct? And also, do we know why the balance of fire might shift between continents? And should we fear a year of superfire when both Siberia and northern America, they're both in record-setting fire mode?
Yeah, it is true that in 21, the epicenter of the extreme fires was more in Siberia, although those in Canada were also very high. And then in 23, most of the extreme fires were in Canada, and actually relatively less in Siberia. The kind of, you know, whether the drought or the fire in Canada and Siberia are synchronous or asynchronous, they happen in the same time or, you know, not in the same year, is related to the famous jet stream, you know, the way air is flushed very quickly over the northern hemisphere, which bring rain and drought patterns across the boreal regions. And in some years, there is kind of blockage of the circulation that creates drought conditions over both continents. And that's, of course, kind of perfect storm conditions for extreme fire to happen in both regions where you have boreal forests.
Your study finds record CO2 emissions from 2021 boreal forests. Felipe, what do you know about the 2023 fire season so far? And what do you think a similar study would find?
Well, we've been looking at different indicators of fire emissions that are produced almost in near real time using what we call satellite firepower, basically something related to the amount of energy which is released by the fire, which itself is well related with the amount of carbon. And it seems that in 23 in Canada, the amount of carbon that were released by the recent fires was extremely high, maybe two, perhaps three times higher than what it was in 21, which was already a very high year. But in Siberia, it was not as strong as what we have observed in 21. So definitely in Canada, it's really some kind of jamais vu type of event. But in Siberia, it was not a particularly catastrophic fire year.
We have been talking about the way extreme wildfires may push global warming even more, but that is a two-way street. Talk to us about the ways climate change leads to more boreal fires.
Climate change is proceeding with very fast warming in the Arctic and the Northern Hemisphere, and it comes also with an increase in the number and the intensity of heat waves. And we all had recent experience of very long and very severe heat waves in the recent years. When you have dry and hot conditions, the first ignition will start a fire, and because there is a lot of dry fuel available, and because some trees are extremely flammable because they contain a lot of resin, like spruce trees, which are almost omnipresent in Canada, this creates, you know, very fast propagating high energy fires that turn out to emit extremely large amount of CO2 emissions, and in turn, of course, the extra amount of CO2 which is going into the atmosphere is causing an acceleration of the warming. So we do have a risk that, you know, climate warming is triggering more CO2 emissions from boreal and Arctic fires, which in turn accelerate or speeds up the climate warming rate.
Most of us want to know, is the extreme fire behavior in the far north in the last 3 years a new normal, or is it just a short phase that may be interspaced with lower fire years? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. From 2 or 3 years of extreme fires, if we have kind of passed the threshold and all the years in the future will look more like those extreme years, or if it will come back to a low period. For instance, I remember that in the decade of the 2010s, there were less fires in Canada, much less than in the decade of the 2000s. So you have a lot of, you know, decadal and, of course, year-to-year variability in the climate that changes the fire emissions. However, in some regions, like northeastern Siberia, near the Bering Sea, you have a mixture of peat, which burn occasionally, and boreal forest as well. It seems that we have, over the last 5 to 6 years, quite an upward trend of fire that looks, let's say, unprecedented. But what is unprecedented? It's unprecedented compared to the longest record we have. And most of the records we have are coming from satellites. And the longest satellite we have is called Landsat. It's an American satellite. And the first year of observation by Landsat that we have for fire is in the early 80s. So we can only look back with high accuracy to the early 80s in regions like Siberia, where if we want to know if fire regimes are changing or not. This is long on the one hand, but it's still, you know, short when you consider that there is a lot of high variation from year to year and also from decades to decades.
Yes, before the satellites, we had to rely on a few sparse news stories from the Soviet news services, and that wasn't a very good source, but suddenly we had the big eye in the sky. People assume satellites can locate fires and measure their CO2 emissions, but it's not that easy, is it?
No, it's not that easy at all, because, first of all, satellites, most of them do not detect the fires when you have clouds. And you often have clouds and fires burning below the clouds. So detecting fires is not that easy. And then you have a myriad of small fires. And of course, you have very few extreme fires. And many of the small fires, they are very difficult to detect with the previous generation of satellites because they didn't have the kind of accuracy, if you want, in their images to be able to detect a lot of small fires which happen on the ground. So indeed, it's very challenging, but we have now multiple lines of evidence. We have very high-resolution satellites that pass over the same point of the Earth every day or every 2 days. We have satellites that can measure the energy emitted by the fire, and we have also satellites that can measure the amount of atmospheric pollutants like aerosol particles or carbon monoxide or even carbon dioxide, which are emitted by fire. So we have, you know, a constellation of different type of measurement that help us to pin down the amount of carbon and the areas which are affected by fire during extreme fire years and also during normal fire years.
What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm working on using satellite measurements and artificial intelligence to provide new maps of forest, in particular to be able to map the height, the biomass, which is very important for the fire emissions later, of the forest at a very high resolution. Because we don't know very well, you know, how much carbon is contained by forest. We have some inventories, but they are relatively sparse. So trying to combine data from multiple satellites with this new deep learning, artificial intelligence technologies, I hope will allow us to have, you know, much more accurate quantification of the amount of carbon which is in our forest.
Well, in addition to a new map of the forests of Earth, what more do we need to understand accelerating wildfire impacts as Earth continues to warm?
I think we need to combine knowledge of ecology, because the most important thing is, of course, to understand how forest fire happen. And we have, I think, a very good idea or the good idea of what are the conditions that trigger the fire. But then what is important is the recovery and the damage which is caused by the fire. After an extreme fire, how long will it take for the carbon to recover? What kind of plants will we see during the first 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, 100 years after the fire? And how does this change the future carbon trajectories of the forest that will recover from fires during the coming century? And that requires not only satellite observations and models, but it also requires a very detailed knowledge of the ecological processes through which ecosystem and forest ecosystem recover, heal themselves after being affected by large disturbance like fires.
From the French Institute Pierre-Simon Laplace, we've been speaking with scientist Philippe Essier. He is author of the paper, Record High CO2 Emissions from Boreal Fires in 2021. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Philippe, thank you for sharing your time and your insight with us.
Thank you.
We have so many climate warnings lately, a person could do a daily climate show. We need a fully funded professional 24-hour cable and net channel reporting on nothing but the climate emergency. Instead of the latest gossip about Trump, Swift, or Cameron, the Climate Network would show these freak floods in Italian towns, the burned-out crops, and the massive fires. What happened in Acapulco after that city was blown out by the instant hurricane? Is the North African heat wave adding to unrest? I mean, it was like 35 degrees in Gaza the other day. Did you know the Arctic has been overheated and loaded with abnormal amounts of methane? Talk to the slum dwellers in Rio during the feels like 137 degrees Fahrenheit heat, 58.5 C, reported by ABC News. Follow up for a death count later. Tell it like it is. Sure, we could cover the good news about solar and wind installations, the bright ideas for a smart grid, the rare politicians pushing for a survivable Earth. Instead of arresting anyone who protests the climate catastrophe, calling them terrorists, Climate TV can interview them. Could we hear actual green voices, unedited, unframed, instead of oil companies expressing their love for the planet? Where are the climate crisis lines for mental health? Where is the emergency? Here is a couple of story ideas. You heard the Arctic is warming four times faster than global average. When scientists at University College London plugged that into existing climate models, surprise! Those don't go past this guide rails of 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees C warming come 8 years faster than we were told. With Arctic warming included, they found this planet will be consistently 1.5 degrees hotter than pre-industrial by the year 2031 and 2 degrees and climbing by 2050. That's just 7 years away for 1.5 degrees and warming all the time. That's the temperatures where tipping points tip. Sort of good news, countries and industries can no longer lie about their greenhouse gas emissions. A new sensor aboard the International Space Station can identify point sources of greenhouse gas emissions. Where previous satellite measurements identified big gas fields as sources of methane, this new technology can pinpoint who and where. In their first 30 days of its operation, demonstrating its ability to track previously undetected emissions across the Middle East and Central Asia, the researchers identified 65 sources of carbon dioxide and methane emissions, almost entirely from oil and gas sector, as well as from landfills, treatment facilities, and power plants. This news was published by the journal Science Advances. Find links in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Our climate TV station could thrive on headlines like this in Science Alert. Physicists warn Earth could feasibly descend into chaos. Author Michelle Starr says the impact of human activity on the Earth system could result in unpredictable chaos from which there is no return, physicists have calculated. They worry about a phase transition found in many operations in this world. Oh, those egg-headed physicists, what would they know, like that Einstein guy? How about this one? Projected change in the burden of excess cardiovascular deaths associated with extreme heat by mid-century, 2036 to 2065, in the contiguous United States. That was a paper published October 30th. According to the American Heart Association, heat-related cardiovascular deaths in the U.S. may more than double within decades. That's what they say. Extreme heat kills people with heart conditions. We don't need to wait until the 2040s. No doubt that is happening right now in South America. Here is another one worth an in-depth story. Extreme weather is outpacing even the worst-case scenarios of our forecasting models. That was published October 30th in The Conversation by Ravindra Jayaratne. On October 25th, in 24 hours, a tropical depression became Cat 5 Hurricane Otis, slamming Acapulco. Sorry, I can't just let that one go. None of the forecasting models predicted that. It's not possible. And it happened. Will they rebuild it all? The United Nations University issued a report, Interconnected Disaster Risks. It's more on cascading tipping points in the Earth system. I have an interview with the author conducted by filmmaker Nick Breeze coming up on this show. Things are so upside down, even good news has a bad side. Take the great pollution cleanup in China. The Energy Policy Institute at the University of Chicago runs a service called the Air Quality Life Index, or AQLI. They write, despite significant increases in particulate pollution in many regions of the world, global pollution has declined since 2013. That decline is due entirely to China's success in steeply reducing pollution. Since declaring a war against pollution in 2014, after the country experienced some of its highest pollution levels, swift policy actions led pollution in China to decline by 42.3% between 2013 and 2021. That extended the average person's life expectancy by 2.2 years if these reductions in pollution are sustained. Beijing province experienced the largest decline in pollution, dropping 56.2% in just 8 years. The average person living there could expect to live 4.2 years longer. The global decline in pollution in recent years is due entirely to China. That is great news for over a billion people in China. It is also part of the aerosol reduction that reveals our true level of heating. Without that cooling smog, without the sulfur and ship emissions, more of the actual warming arises on the Earth, like in Rio, or the next killer heat domes coming in 2024. The World Meteorological Organization is finally waking up to the climate emergency. They say greenhouse gas emissions are still rising with no signs of stopping. I have an interview with a WMO spokesman coming up. Stay tuned as we record from a world in trouble, still hoping for a great awakening. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.